My name is Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom to four kids, ages 2 through 9, and we are learning how to make joy normal.
My name is Bonnie Landry, and I want to welcome you to season 2 of our podcast, Make Joy Normal. We want to thank everybody for their support and how much you've shared this podcast with your friends and those who you think it would be helpful for. I am a wife, I'm a mom, I'm a grandma. I've been homeschooling for 30 years. My kids are ages 14 to 33. I only have one at home now. I'm a speaker, a writer, a blogger, and I guess we're podcasters now, Elizabeth. And I'm an advocate of joy. So welcome to our podcast. Okay, so thank you so much for being with us today, Sarah. I am going to very quickly introduce our guest to you. And before I do that, we have been talking the last few weeks on our podcast about the challenges and some of the difficulties with homeschooling and family life. And Sarah is somebody who would like to share some of her story with us. And, you know, some of that story is very difficult. Some of it is dealing with loss. And I just want to say that from the outset for those who may be sensitive to hearing about loss or listening to the story, just to be aware that will be, we'll give a bit more disclosure in the show notes about what we actually talk about, because we don't really know where the conversation will go, but that's a possibility. So welcome so much, Sarah. And Sarah is a military wife. Her husband is Jason. They've been married for almost 18 years. They have two sons who are 14 and 13 and a daughter who's 6, and they've been homeschooling for 10 years. Sarah grew up in Littleton, Colorado, but because she's a military wife, she is goes wherever the Army sends her. So right now that's Hawaii. So just so you know, we're all envious. So we might as well just be honest.
It's super rainy today and lots of flooding, if that makes anyone feel better.
I had a cousin years ago who was posted in Hawaii, and he said, it's just not all it's cracked up to. If you hear us a tourist, that's different.
Yeah, so, no, we okay, love it now.
But
yeah,
I don't know if now. I believe it. Sarah loves to read. She loves coffee and tea with her friends, nature walks, and adventuring. And I was hoping you could tell us a bit more. What define adventuring for me?
Lots of different things. So one of the things we do as our family, like, we just like to adventure. And I feel as a military family, we have the advantage of knowing that we're only going to be somewhere for 2 or 3 years.
Right.
So we really jump in right away to figure out what kind of adventures to go on. So we were in Los Angeles before here, and we just got to see all sorts of things. We had a pop-up trailer. We camped all up and down the coast of California.
Probably things people from that town don't do because they live there, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And we got here to Hawaii. We love to hike. We like to go out in the water. Like the other day, we kayaked to an offshore island. Wow. And yeah, so lots of different things. And then when our kids turn 10, we get to go on an adventure, and they get to pick. So our oldest wanted to do a Route 66 road trip. We saw the Grand Canyon, Petrified Forest. We did all sorts of stuff, and it was great. And our second one, we had just moved to Hawaii, and he wanted to see the lunar eclipse from the active volcano. So we got to go to Hawaii Island. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we got to hike to real lava and hear it, like, the rocks would pop underneath our feet the lava would start moving underneath, and then we'd know we'd have to move. So just all sorts of
crazy. Pick a new dream.
Right? Yeah. It was amazing.
That's
though.
Amazing. Good for you. What a cool family tradition.
Yeah. Right? So we'll see what our daughter picks, but she's got 4 years. So.
Yeah. She'll be thinking about it for sure. Yeah.
Right.
We have, Sarah and I met because we have a common friend who you obviously met when you were living in LA, I presume. And I met, let's call her Kimberly, because it's her name. So Kimberly and I met because I was speaking at a conference down there several years ago, and we just really connected. And so I've gone down and visited her since, and we've kept in touch. So I'm so grateful that she's put us together. And she just felt like you and I should talk. That it should be, you know, and especially when this particular topic came up, she said, you really, really got to interview Sarah because, you know, she's dealt with some real challenges and dealt with them with a lot of grace was Kimberly's take on that, which is lovely, right?
I'm glad she thought that because I don't feel that way about it, but it's always good. So she's one of my best friends and a good confidant. So
yeah. So I sort of had some, with Kimberly's help, actually, I sort of put some questions together, but I was wondering, was there any more you sort of wanted to let us know about your family and this kind of the structure of your family or anything that would be sort of relevant to the coming questions?
They were never in school, I presume? So I had both of them in public preschool. So they both have some special needs and health challenges. And so they went to public preschool. I pulled them after a kindergarten IEP meeting that did not go the way that I wanted. And I was just tired already of fighting the system. And I said, instead of putting all this negative energy, because the teachers, the administrators, they want to do the right thing, but it, you know, it comes down to money and who fights the hardest gets what their kid needs. And it just seems like I was spending so much time in a negative way that I could have done in a more positive way. So I guess the theme of my life is that I tell God the things that I will not do. He laughed. So I said that I would not be a stay-at-home mom. And I was mad about the NFP class that talked about the importance of moms from 0 to 3. So mad that I wrote the bishop.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So, we're getting a picture. We're painting a picture.
So I had a really difficult pregnancy with our first. I guess the theme of this is just that from the moment my husband and I got married, it's been an adventure for better and worse. We got married with 36 hour notice because he had just gotten home from another school and they were deploying him. So we got a dispensation. We got married in the church. We had 40 people and a reception that we pulled together and it was awesome. And my dad stayed up all night and prayed for my husband's orders to go away, which never happens. And the next morning when he got ready to report, they said it all had been a mistake.
You're kidding.
Yeah. So we were just married. We got to start a life, but it wasn't what we had envisioned. And he also was not in the military. He was just a reservist at this point. So anyway, it got kind of. So I didn't sign up for a lot of this. But God, you know, he knows better. He also knows how stubborn I am. So if I like had a choice, maybe I would have said no. Through a difficult pregnancy, I didn't have a job to go back to. So I was just going to stay home for a year until my husband moves again. Anyway, our son had a lot of health challenges. Things happened. I was like, okay, Lord, I will be a stay-at-home mom, but I am not going to homeschool.
Because the two go hand in glove, right?
Right. I saw my friends starting to homeschool. I was like, I'm definitely not doing that. And I am just so, so grateful that God knows better. He gently nudges me, or not so gently, into this life. So, you know, things quickly change from how I saw things going to how they actually go.
Right.
For good and bad. And it's just been, I don't know, kind of crazy, all the stuff that has happened, but I'm also just so grateful for God's leading me.
And I mean, because we can turn that one way or another, right? We can rail against our life circumstances, or we can, you know, kind of accept what is and make the most of them too, right? Those are kind of our two options, almost, including, you know, whatever, the juice on the floor or stepping on the Lego or whatever. Those little challenges really are the thing that prepare us for the big challenges in our, how we respond, right?
Yes. And sometimes, honestly, I respond better to the big challenges than I do to the little.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's when maybe all the scales fall away, right? That, you know, we can be so at peace with something, you know, crashing and burning around us rather than the little frustrations of our day-to-day life, right? I think that that happens for some people, you know, for whatever reason, we're just more tolerant of the big things, right?
Right. Like where you absolutely cannot control it and it's obvious. Sometimes that's easier, not better, but, you know, just I have to remind myself in the daily little sufferings to be okay with that too.
They're the prep work, right? Okay. So I know that your life has had a lot of curveballs, and, you know, and I love that you call them adventures. That I think that's really important, right? Turn it into adventure. There's a great quote that just recently has been floating around saying, I used to call this anxiety, but now I just call it excitement. So I feel a lot better now. Right? So true. And okay, so what are some of your most memorable curveballs / adventures?
Well, when we moved to Hawaii, we got here, we had no housing. So we had lived in a hotel for 2.5 months. Wow. We finally get into our house. We don't have our stuff. It's like completely empty. And we get this weird like alarm on our phone. It says, this is not a drill, missile inbound. We thought for 38 minutes that we were under nuclear attack. We assumed North Korea, and we hid in a bathroom waiting for it to hit, because I guess it was a mistake. They pushed the wrong button and then they had no way to retract it. So it was a big like welcome to Hawaii.
Welcome to Hawaii. Every new customer gets a missile.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is not funny, but it's kind of funny, right?
It is kind of funny now. Like honestly, in the moment, I couldn't even remember. I love that divine mercy prayer, you know, that we may not despair, become despondent.
Right.
I couldn't remember any of it. So then I just kept saying like Jesus over and over, and I trust in you. And I was like trying to remember act of contrition, leading the kids through it.
Wow.
But yeah, so that was an interesting thing. And a lot of our friends here in Hawaii, we all remember where we were when that happened.
Wow. Now would only military families have received
that
message?
No, it was the entire island. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was a big, you cannot control this moment. We're the most isolated island chain that's inhabited in the world. And so you kind of forget that you're just really a rock in the middle of this like big ocean. So it was a big invitation to trust. And I actually started praying the Sisters of Life Litany of Trust after that, because we did deal with some anxiety after that, because it was just like this physical response to that.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Yeah, the kids slept in our room for a while and cots.
Wow.
But yeah, you know, it was a good reminder, though, that we always want to be in the friendship of Jesus, because you don't know what kind of curveball is going to be thrown at you next. So
yeah, exactly.
Luckily, it was just a mistake. And we can all laugh about it now.
Okay, so then did things settle down in Hawaii after that?
So no. We love Hawaii so much. It's just been, you know, a really rotten year for a lot of people. So last March, I got an unknown respiratory illness, and we didn't have COVID tests yet. I was in the hospital and I threw a blood clot into my lung. So I'm still like dealing with those repercussions. But the community here was so beautiful with how they just stepped up and helped us out. And so then I thought that was settling down, and now we own a house in Colorado. That's our retirement house. And we just found out that it is condemned for meth contamination. We had a man like living in our treehouse in the backyard. Apparently our neighbor finally
called. Been rented out or something.
Yeah. So our tenants had a big grow operation and was making meth.
And you can't go there.
We can't go there because COVID, like my husband isn't allowed to travel right now. So it's just been like one invitation after another. And honestly, it's devastating because it's like financially, I have no idea how this is going to work out. It could be $200,000 worth of damage. But at the same time, I don't know, I guess just all the things we've been through, I'm kind of excited to see how God's going to work it out.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is just stuff. And I just think that this year, a lot of us have had things just stripped away. And I'm just grateful I didn't die from that blood clot. And so,
but it wasn't COVID.
Well, they couldn't test me yet. We didn't have the test. So I was in the negative pressure room at Tripler, which is the military hospital. So maybe it was. And the way that my kids had a GI thing at the same time, and my husband had come home from Washington State. So possibly.
Right. Yeah. Cause they got hit pretty hard in the beginning. Yeah. Interesting. Well, it's interesting you say about sort of that juxtaposing, like what feels like a frustration, you know, after I had my youngest daughter, so she's now 14. So after I had her, we had a situation happen where I was, she was a month old, had a great birth, everything was great, you know, and I started getting abdominal pain and started losing weight really quickly. And over the course of 9 weeks, which was the time that this disease got worse and worse and worse and worse over time, the abdominal pain was excruciating. I was in and out of the hospital all the time. Turned out what happened was I had an undiagnosed bowel blockage. It's called an intussusception, where the bowel sucks inside itself, and had to have an emergency resection. But it was diagnosed. I was at least 48 hours past the time when I should have already been dead, right? You know, now I know that, you know, there was someone watching over me, right? I have no doubt about it, because there's no way I should have lived through it. However, I did. And it was a very, very long road to recovery and whatnot. I was very, very sick. And, you know, for much of that time, we didn't know if I was going to live or die, right? So it was a pretty terrifying time. But at the same time, I had been home from the hospital for maybe a couple of weeks, and I had just was allowed to start holding my newborn baby again, right? I wasn't allowed to hold her unless I was actually sitting and had cushions propped up and whatnot. But then we had a big snowstorm here, and down at the end of our road, we had a 15-seater van at the time, because she was our seventh, you know, we were a big family. We couldn't make it up our hill. We live on the top of a big hill, and our van was parked at the bottom. And the next day, my husband was shoveling our driveway, and somebody came along and said, "Oh, did you see that van down at the bottom of the hill?" And my husband said, "What?" And it turned out that some vandals had come along in the night, because he had walked home, got our truck, and come and picked us up from, because the van couldn't make it up the hill that night. So the next day, sometime through the night, vandals had come, and they'd broken every single window out of our huge van, right? And there was, I think it was $15,000 worth of damage to the van, or $18,000, some ridiculous amount, luckily, and covered by insurance. But at the time, both of us just went, it's just a van, right? If we hadn't just been through this experience of me on death's door for, you know, a number of weeks and just hanging in the balance, that issue with the van would have seemed like a much, much bigger deal, right? But because, you know, mortality gives you perspective, right? And so, yes. And so I think that, you know, we've laughed about that several times. Like, if that happened right now, we'd be just like, you know, so frustrated and so angry and so outraged. And it was just sort of like arms in the air, kind of no big deal, right? It's just a man, you know? Right. So I totally get that. Like I, you know, and we don't always learn from it. I mean, we sort of learn over time, but I think if it happened now, I would be reacting very differently. Okay. Onto the curveballs. So we are dealing with the grow up house.
Yeah.
We're dealing with the sick mom, and you're still having health issues because of that. We are dealing with a false missile alarm. These are all like all standalone. These would all be very big deals, right? So were there more curveballs? Were there more things that had to require your trust and required your...
I feel like the year that really helped me learn trust, that I just see God and his healing and his holding me, is my husband was gone for a year. Right. And we had been trying so we had our first baby, had a lot of health issues. Our second baby was a surprise.
Yeah.
So grateful like for that now. And at that point I was like, oh, I really can't control fertility. And right. Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, Lord, like we're open, give us all the babies. And we weren't able to get pregnant for 5 years.
Oh my gosh.
And so, my husband left for his year, and I found out 2 weeks after that that I was pregnant, and I have really rough pregnancies. Also, my husband seems to be gone every time during the beginning. So I have something called hyperemesis. I have to be on like an IV all the time for fluids, and I throw up all the time. So it's not super fun. And I also have a blood clotting disorder that I found out about with our first, I had a giant clot. And was on hospital bed rest for a couple of months with him. So I have to give myself shots. Like it's, you know, being pregnant.
Is this heparin?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. A friend of mine had the same thing happen where for her last three babies, she had to do the heparin shots. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. So grateful for that. Cause again, a lot of people used to just die from this. Yeah. So grateful that they know this and it's a genetic thing. And they were able to test my sister. So she knew before she ever got a clot and was able to have her babies without any issue just by doing the shots. So being pregnant is a big deal. And I'm by myself with a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, both of which also have some special needs. So my oldest is 6 at this point, and he was diagnosed with autism at 18 months. He's super high functioning and actually looks more like an attentive ADHD right now. So some of this like non-typical neuro stuff, it's kind of hard to parse out what exactly
for sure,
it is.
Yeah.
It's just executive functioning difficulties. And my second also, but in different ways, they're like complete opposite kids. So I'm by myself. I have these little boys and my husband's gone, and it's really rough pregnancy. And then in my second trimester, I went for a routine ultrasound because I'm high risk. We have them a lot, and they couldn't find a heartbeat. So it was like this prayed for baby. I'd been suffering for a while with this difficult pregnancy. And all the time when I'm going through pregnancy, I'm like, it's worth it. I get this baby at the end, you know?
Right.
And so it just felt like I really had to go through a lot of who is God and what is suffering and why does he allow it? And I was very close to despair, to be honest. I went to mass because I didn't want to go to hell. I didn't want my boys to go.
Yeah.
But if I hadn't had that like obligation, I don't know if I would have gone. And I sat back in the back of the church, and I was really struggling with bitterness and like, Lord, none of my motherhood has been the way that I wanted. I gave you my fertility. I've given you like my first has autism. My second has this GI condition. He couldn't eat food until he was 5. He was on medical formula. We had so much therapy. My friends are going to play dates and I'm going to the hospital for their therapy appointments, like 40 hours a week between the two of them. It just was not what I had signed up for.
Right.
And my husband is gone. And then our baby dies. And I had had, I was like, what the heck? You know that, I think it's St. Teresa of Avila. If this is how you treat your friends, well, this is why you have so few.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Like that really resonated with me. And at the same time, a lot of people were telling me that this is God's plan for my holiness. And this is just my path to heaven. And this is what God wanted. Mm-hmm. And it really made me question who God is and if he's good and can I trust him?
Right.
Because I didn't know if I could. And I thought that I would always be broken. I know it sounds like dramatic now, but I thought I would never come back from this. And I actually went to therapy, which I'm so grateful that I had a really good grief therapist who really understands infertility and baby loss. She was amazing. And she just told me, like, grief is a 500-pound weight. You are flattened by it at the beginning. But each day you get a little bit more used to that 500-pound weight, and someday it's not going to flatten you.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know if I wanted that, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, we sort of get comfortable snuggled up to our grief in a sense, right?
Yes.
You must have felt betrayed.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I was that verse of you were good to your children, you're a good father. If they ask you for bread, I think they
Give them a stone.
You wouldn't give the snake, right?
Or a snake.
And I was like, you gave me a snake. Like, what is going on? And I found a wonderful spiritual director. Like, God was right there with me on so many ways of consolation. I just couldn't see it at the moment.
Right.
But I had a spiritual director and I was like, I can't even read the Psalms. They're just too hopeful. It just makes me mad.
Yeah.
And he taught me how to lament. So we just stuck with Job for a while. And I just,
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you know, you're in a bad place when Job is your pick me up.
Right. Yeah. I was like, I feel understood, and not, you know, Job had a word. I'm not saying like I was Job, but I just needed to hear a righteous person to kind of question, because I felt like if I was being honest,
yeah,
a lot of people didn't want me to question like if God is good. And I just, then I moved on to Lamentations. I eventually got to the Psalms, and I just am so amazed by me giving him my grief, being okay with where I'm at, and just trusting in him that he would get me through it. Like, pieces of me that I thought would never be the way they are, right, are put back together. Relationships.
Yeah.
There were a lot of friends that were uncomfortable with how deeply I was grieving and didn't want to be there with me. And I thought I would never talk to them again. I was not very fun to be around. But seriously, like, seeing these relationships repaired that I thought were beyond repair, I just, I have a friend this week, she's walking through miscarriage, and I just was able to speak to her. And honestly, too, it's 7 years later, and I'm able to talk about our son, Francis, who's buried in a national cemetery, which is such a consolation to me, too, to be able to see his headstone and to know that he's praying for us. And I'm just so grateful to God for bringing me out of that, because I kind of saw that I was becoming better. Yeah. I did not want to be that better woman.
Yeah. And isn't it amazing that then he can then use what your, you know, your experiences to carry another, right? And isn't that, I mean, you know, all our suffering in life, you know, we have the opportunity to help another carry their burden, right? Because you do know, I mean, even if you haven't suffered something, you can enter into someone else's pain, right? And I think that's what many of us shy away from. And that's hard. And, you know, like, you know, the person you didn't want to talk to anymore, the people who couldn't be with you, you know, I think we at some point can recognize, if we're open to it, we can recognize that they weren't equipped, right? And maybe they're more equipped now, or maybe we can even help equip them, right? You know, because sometimes an inability to walk with somebody in their suffering is a sign of somebody not having suffered a lot, you know, or you know, maybe not addressing their own suffering or something, right? Yeah.
Or just not knowing what grief is, like thinking that if someone's grieving, they're making it worse for themselves. Like, it's better to just distract. Yeah. I see that a lot in our society. Me too, honestly. If I'm going through a rough time, I'd rather, you know, watch something or read something or eat something, you know, to like kind of distract me from that. But if we can just sit in it, I read the book A Grief Observed by C.S. Lewis, and I just felt really heard by that and seen, like, he's such a faithful man, and he felt.
I haven't read it.
It's beautiful. Oh, so okay.
I'll put it in the show.
Yeah, I read that he wrote it originally under a pen name, but then when everybody was telling him he should read it, he was like, well, I wrote it.
That's funny.
So, yeah. He really grieved and helped me see through. I feel like grief is normal. All of us are going to go through it in some point, but we're so uncomfortable with any suffering that we will do anything to avoid it.
Yeah. You know, I've always been really grateful to my mother-in-law, because I was kind of raised in an environment we didn't really talk about death. We didn't really talk about mortality. We didn't really talk about bad things. I mean, you know, occasionally bad things happen, but it was just kind of a little bit swept under the rug. I had wonderful parents, but it was just, they were very uncomfortable with tragedy, right? And when I met my husband, my mother-in-law, you know, they had lived in this little tiny French town up in northern Alberta, and they it was a really small town, and everybody knew everybody, and they all went to the same church, and they all went to the same school, and, you know, tiny little place. And so she just had this attitude, you know, when someone's dying, you feed them. When someone's, you know, lost a baby, when someone's, you know, had a baby, when someone's, you know, suffering in some way, you're just there. You just show up, you bring food, you ask them, do they need anything? And she was so comfortable with loss and tragedy. And, you know, not that, I mean, of course things made her sad, but it was just her ability to walk amongst it was such a learning point for me. And I'll always be so eternally grateful for that gift she gave me to just feel, okay, I can walk amongst this, right? You know, and be okay right? I can be okay. I'm going to ask a question because I know that a lot of homeschooling moms will be wondering this, you know, because all of us at some point or another deal with tragedy in our lives, deal with crisis in our lives, you know, even having a baby, the year you're pregnant, just that in and of itself can be a crisis, right? Or a newborn and postpartum depression and various other things that can happen to us. Those are all crises, maybe not of the same magnitude, but pretty big, right? Yes. Pretty big.
Yeah.
And how do you persevere in homeschooling when, you know, we've been taken on the responsibility of educating our children? How do you persevere when you've been handed, you know, a particular crisis, right?
So someone told me this because I don't remember who it was, one of my friends. It was like, just because something's hard doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Because I felt like if something was hard, I was doing something wrong. I needed to find a way to make it easy. There's got to be this hack or something. I'm just doing it wrong.
Homeschooling hacks.
Right? Yeah. If I just figured out the perfect schedule or whatever, if my kids are just typical learners, if they just have the right curriculum, like it'll be easy and it won't be hard. And things that are worth doing are often hard. And so in a way, when we're going through crisis and we're dealing with other things, it could seem that it's easier or that your kids will get a better education if you sent them to school. And right. I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but you should really pray about discernment of that, because I also feel like it was a gift for my kids to see that this is how we do life. And life is not always easy. Like, life is so beautiful and worth living, and we do a lot of that too with our, you know, good, true, and beautiful and all of that, but it's also really hard sometimes. And this is how we deal with things that are messy, because that is life right now. Like, when we're in eternity, we won't have to deal with it anymore. But I just feel like you have to shelter your kids for sure, because they're kids and they don't need all your adult emotion. So there's a lot of processing and things that need to be done away from the kids, but not completely. Being honest with them without overdoing details, I think is really important too. And prayer and sacraments together as a family. Like, you know, it's hard to go to daily mass if your kids are at school. There's a lot of grace in that. Snuggling up and reading a book together. It's just that you won't be sharing life the same way if you weren't homeschooling. So kind of still looking, I like to write my why we're doing it, because when it is hard, when you're getting in the mess of things and it would be easier to send them to school, you think, like, if I can see my why, you can see that you can often hit that without doing the same school load that you wanted to do. Right.
Well, I think a nice parallel that we can make is, since this is what you're saying, in another way, but a nice parallel for me anyways, is that if there's a crisis in your life, you still have to feed your kids, right? And in a sense, that purposeful work of feeding your kids is a way of normalizing the crisis, right? Normalizing that, okay, we still have things to do. We still have bodies we have to take care of. We still have to do this stuff. But you don't cook fancy meals, right? No. If you get a hot dog, if you get a, you know, whatever, we're just going to pare it right down to bare bones, nutritious, simple, easy meals, but I still have to feed you, right? And I think we can see this education the same way, right? You know, let's just make it simple. Let's cut it right down to the bare bones of what really is an education. You know, it's reading together. It's discussing things. You know, it's being with you as you explore and wonder, right? And so, you know, and in a sense, that purposeful work is the very thing that can help us to cope with a crisis, the normalizing element, right?
Right. So often when the crisis first hits, there's definitely like survival mode. So our house, for example, happened right before Christmas. I took an extra 3-week break.
Yeah.
My kids, they made this big Lego world in a room upstairs, and I was on the phone almost all the time. But and that's okay for like a short period of time. I actually don't even remember what I fed them, but I must have.
Yeah, they might have helped themselves. Who knows?
Right? They probably, yeah. But there's like a point where you're ready, because a lot of these crises are going to take a while. It's not just a little acute situation. And so you can't stay in that forever because things will actually get harder. Laundry will pile up. Your kids, you know, when they're not fed good food, they often act out. And if they are not given a basic schedule on what to expect, that just makes everything messier too. And you're like, why can't you leave me alone to get stuff done? But really, you know, if they had a little bit of consistency to know what to expect. Yeah. So we get down to a bare bones schedule, but like one thing that our family does, no matter what, we take a walk at 6 o'clock every day, right before we have dinner at 6:30. Wow. And you know, just knowing, like yesterday was pouring rain.
Yeah.
But that's what we do. And that's one of the benchmarks of our day that kids know happens.
Yeah. And kids thrive on routine, you know, like it's such an important part of both our regular life and our crisis life, you know. And we had this line that we used for years and years. It's like, well, we're Landry's. That's what we do. Yeah. Right? And so, you know, we sit down to dinner. We don't bring phones to the table. We don't, you know, whatever, all the things, you know, everybody gets to decide what their family culture is. But, you know, just that sort of those words, you know, well, this is, we're Landry's. This is what we do. Right.
Yeah. You know? So, yeah, that's what we say we're Goodmans and Goodmans do hard.
Right.
So like, you know, we can do this. We can handle this. So, and we do that with a lot of things too, even fun things like that hike that we took out to the lava. It was 9 miles and I didn't realize how up and down it was going to be, like up and over all these rocks, and my legs were shot. And it was a little scary too, because it was like pitch black on the way back. Right. You're in this giant lava field and the kids, you know, at the end, they may have been crying.
They may or may not have been crying.
I was just encouraging them, like, guys, we can do this. We do hard things. And then, you know, we loved it at the end when it was done. We're glad we did it.
Yeah. That's the thing you always do, right? So what is the thing that you think in your life that has been the biggest inspiration for you to be able to deal with all these things and continue to just grow in grace and grow in family harmony? So it's really obvious to me that that's vital to you and important to you, that growing as a person and growing your family and being, you know, growing in grace and having this be a functional working organism, right? You know, and I'm just sensing that from you, that what is it that inspires more than anything else?
So prayer, obviously, but I forget so much the truths, like God is good, God loves us, God, you know, do not fear. I forget that. And so I try to have that in my head a lot during the day. So either hymns or music on. I listen to a lot of different podcasts. Right now I'm loving that Bible in a Year podcast. Like,
oh, just amazing, eh?
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to be reminded, like the in Psalm 136, and they just go through all the great things of God. Like, I have a journal and I've written all the good things that he's done for me. I just need to be reminded constantly. My friends too. When I'm feeling really discouraged, and I have friends all over the world now from moving around, which has been a really good gift of military life.
Yeah.
My really good ones that'll call me out and be like, you're being whiny. And or two, like, you have permission to mope. This is really hard.
Yeah.
But this is who God is. Like, they constantly are reminding me.
Right.
And so I just feel like it's easy in the darkness to forget that.
Yeah.
And the saints, the lives of the saints, like even today, Saint Francis of Rome.
Yeah.
Just reading, my daughter has that one from Sophia Institute Press, the coloring book.
Right.
It was just like, even in her sadness, she served others. And it was just like, oh yeah, you keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, do you find, for me, this works, I sense it will for you too, just from things you're saying, that they're breaking life down, you know, okay, I don't have to worry about tomorrow. I just need to worry about this next hour. I just need to be concerned about this morning. I need to be concerned about, you know, this next 15 minutes. And the age of your kids or the level of the crises you're experiencing in your life will very much determine how much further you're ahead you're looking. Do you find the same thing?
Oh, absolutely. But I don't do that naturally. So I have several friends that'll be like, you know, my kid misbehaved. He said something mean about somebody like 2 weeks ago. Yeah. I won't say which one. I'm freaking out about it. Like,
right. My kid's important to freak out sometimes, right?
Right. I'm like, he's going to go to jail. Yeah. He might even go to hell. Like, I've screwed this all up. Like, it's ridiculous. But my friend is like, it's one mistake. Like, yeah. Let's just deal with today. Yeah. You know, it was just all of my, you know, I wanted to ground him for the rest of his life, which is ridiculous. And I didn't even ask him why he did it. I just, you know, fly off the handle sometimes.
Yeah.
When we were moving from LA, I walked out. We lived in base housing. I walked outside. And you can't take spray paint. So I had it outside of the curb so that it didn't get packed.
Right.
The boys had taken the spray paint and giant, they had spray painted their names on the side of the house. Like giant. In base housing. And I started thinking they did it on purpose. They're right. Vandalizing our house to show their anger at the move.
Right.
And I can't believe I've raised these people. So I'm upset and angry. And then tears were running down my son's face. And he's like, Mom, we thought it was washable.
Oh,
like, oh, like, you know, you just can get so far ahead. Instead, just like slowing down, being like, in the moment, why'd you do this?
Yeah.
A lot of times it's not what we think. And honestly, last week, I was like, we don't have a lot of money in savings and groceries have just been really expensive. And I have 2 teenage boys. And I was like, Lord, I cannot pull this money from savings. I'm getting really low on groceries and I don't know what I'm going to do about it, but we're okay today. And then my husband got a call that somebody at work is moving and had some food in the freezer. And they're like, it's common. We often will give away food, you know, when we're moving, we can't take it. And she's like, do you want it? And I was like, I'll eat anything. Like, I don't care what it is, we'll take it.
Yeah,
it was a big giant box of steaks.
Oh my god.
And I just felt like, how generous of her, first of all, but second of all, like, that was God. Like, hello, I've got this.
Yeah.
And not only do I, you know, you're gonna be fed, but this is like abundant love. And it just was awesome.
Amazing, eh? Yeah. And so, you know, if you're too busy worrying about 2 weeks from now or whatever, it just, you lose all that, right? And it's funny when you're mentioning your boys. As soon as you said spray paint, I thought, oh, boys and spray paint. It just sounds like such a bad combo. But, you know, if we, our tendency as human beings, especially because there's this thing, I've used this analogy before. It's like, we just automatically assume because they're misbehaving when they're 4 or 14 or whatever, that they're going to end up in jail. Like, that's where our brain goes. It's okay. You know what? You're so bad. There's nowhere this can go except jail. There's no other options.
And it's all my fault because I'm the worst mother.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's all our fault because mom guilt. Our last episode was all on mom guilt. But we pounce, right? And so if we can train ourselves to just breathe for a moment or take one small pause, like, okay, Lord, you know, just help me refrain from pouncing, right? Because when we pounce, nothing good happens from that, right?
No. Yeah. So when we found out about the meth house, it was December 8th, Immaculate Conception. I was on the phone with the police. Our tenant is trying to put everything in the U-Haul so they don't get caught. I'm on the phone with the police. My daughter climbed to the microwave to try to get her food out of the microwave, and it's right above the stove. And she leaned on the stove with her leg, and we had never had serious burns before. It was a third degree. So I'm on the phone with the cops. My daughter has a serious burn, and I'm just like, Lord, I literally did not know what to do. And then I forgot that my daughter was supposed to have a piano lesson, and my friend was dropping off the piano teacher. And I don't even remember like what happened in the moment, but she helped me. She helped me deal with the house. She helped me deal with my daughter. And my husband was able to take my daughter to the hospital. I was able to deal with the house. And then she came by later with the lasagna. but like, just staying in that moment and not getting too far ahead. And I can just look back on that too. And it was the craziest, really hard day.
Yeah.
and caring for burns. I've never done that before. It was kind of traumatic.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, so I just like, you know, staying in the moment instead of, I still have no idea how this house thing's going to work out.
Yeah. But yeah.
Today we're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Today you have a roof over your head, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And who knows?
And steaks in the freezer.
I love it. So I guess to sort of our wrap up question, I think would be really important for, you know, I mean, most moms can relate certainly to some of what you're going through, right? You know, and you're sort of on probably on the extreme end of things that go wrong. But we know, what advice do you have for moms who are going through a hard time right now, right? How do we hold that up?
So I think we talked a little bit, you know, minimum viable homeschooling, and there's mm-hmm. some other homeschool moms who talk about that on podcasts. So you kind of like look at what needs to be done for your homeschool, what needs to be done for your home, which I have three, which is dishes, dirty laundry, dinner. Mm-hmm. Those three things need to be done every day for a minimum viable day. Mm-hmm. And then there's some minimum viable things for myself. I need to sleep. I need to take care of myself physically. I do not do well on not having sleep. So I make that a priority, even when we're in a super stressful, chaotic time, especially with my health.
Right.
I need to make that a priority. I need to eat, because I often will forget to. I actually have, like, during really hard times, I have an alarm on my phone, like, it's time to eat. So, because I often mm-hmm. would feed my kids and forget to eat myself.
Right.
And the other thing, or I guess there's two more things. I need to read every day, because that really does nourish my soul, gives me inspiration. Right. And I often have like a basket with three or four things, and I'll pick up what I feel like in the moment.
Kind of grounds you?
Grounds me. So right now, like, I have Story of a Soul in there. I have some Flannery O'Connor. Like, it's kind of like, what mood am I in? Chesterton will always be in there. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It just gives me either comfort if it's something hard being dealt with the book, or to remember how good the world is. And that's my other thing, is I'm always looking for something good, true, and beautiful. So during like COVID lockdown and all this craziness, we got a bird feeder, and it's such a simple thing.
Yeah.
We have these parakeets here in Hawaii. They're super cool. Yeah. But I know all these birds now, and it's just like creation and beauty really reminds me of God and his presence through everything. And so that's something we share at the dinner table also. We do high, low, and then, you know, share something good, true, beautiful today that lifted you to God. And it's just to remember, even in the midst of terrible, hard things, there's so much goodness and there's so much beauty.
Yeah.
And occasionally too, I have, you know, the minimum viable day, but the other day we just need to get out of the house. So we just took the paddle boards out and just got out of the house, and we'll deal with it another day. So, you know, just having good things happen to remind you of God's goodness really helps me.
Yeah. You know, there's what you're saying is echoing something another gal that I know, I've interviewed her on the podcast as well. And she has a beautiful resource that she has on her Instagram. Her Instagram handle is Simple Home Mom. And she has this, it's basically the, I can't remember what they are. One is like the three things I need to do for my home today, the three things I need to do for me today, the three things I maybe for my kids. I can't remember what the three categories are, but just this simple that you can print out. You could print one out every day if you needed to, or just the days you really feel like you need grounding. That these are the priorities today, and just the way she's written them out so beautifully, like you're going to be thinking about that which really matters. It's not like, okay, I'm going through a middle of the crisis, you know, or I'm pregnant, time to clean my basement or declutter my closet. No, girl. No, you know. And you know, these are just such beautiful reminders for our moms to be listening to, that, you know, we just scale back and remember what matters most, like we can remember in the big crisis times, right? This is what matters most, right?
And I do have like a brain dump notebook. So when I see a closet that's driving me crazy, in the middle of crisis, it's not the time to deal with it. And I write it down so that if there is time, you know, things settle down, I can start looking at what really is bothering me. but it kind of just gives it a place, like not now, later. And that way it's not in my head anymore. I just get it out of my head so I can focus on what really needs to be done. And someday we'll all have clean closets. And-
Well, you know, we're getting to that now. Like I only have one child at home now, you know, and we've been homeschooling for 30 years, you know, and, but I have a lot of similar habits to you. And, you know, now there's things that I, you know, might've loved to have done 10 years ago, but wasn't the season. Right. And really honoring those seasons, and it's okay. Right. It's okay. Really, you know, if you found out your, you know, your mother was dying or somebody close to you was suffering in some huge way or whatever, you wouldn't be cleaning out your closet. Right. No. It's not the season. And so, you know, we just have to be okay with that.
Yeah. And like probably, the school year this year, like it's not the season for Plutarch. So I put that back on the shelf. We'll do it next year.
Like, so many times. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Some other year. Yeah. It'll be fine. And if you never get to it, that will be fine too.
Which I've never read it before either, but I would like my kids to read it, but yeah, that one back on the shelf this year with no guilt, not the year for it. So.
Oh yeah, let's unravel the guilt, right? Offload the guilt. I'm gonna have to wrap up now, but thank you so much. So your sharing has just been absolutely beautiful, and I will pray for you because you still have issues that you're dealing with, right? And, and well, now we know the Goodmans do hard, but you know, we call Goodmans it a little supportive.
I would appreciate prayer because honestly, I don't know how this all is gonna work out at all.
But. Well, I'll tell you something. You remind me so much of our last podcast, not our last one, but the one before that. We interviewed a gal because we've been talking about hard things, right? Who suffers from depression and bipolar and is homeschooling her children. Right. So, I mean, not a dissimilar story, different things, but, you know, and a lot of her things that she was saying would, you know, be a parallel to what you're saying too, in different circumstances. But she reminded me of you because you have a beautiful smile. You're just so cheery and happy. And she was like that too. And it's like, wow, she's dealing with this massive plate of things. You're dealing with this massive plate of things. And, you know, just the ability to rise above that. And we all need to see that. We all need to see that it's possible.
One of my favorite quotes from C.S. Lewis is from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And Susan and Lucy are asking about Aslan. And they're asking, well, is he safe? And Mr. Beaver is like, safe? Who said anything about safe? He's not safe, but he's good. And I just like, okay, my life is crazy. It's not safe. I wish it were. I'm so type A. I'm like perfectionist, but it's so good and it's worth it. And I just know God is going to use all of this. None of it is wasted, even when it's the stupid little stuff. Like if we can just remember to offer it back to him, he will use it for good for us and the world. And yeah, he's just been so good to me through all of it. And I'm just really grateful.
Well, to bring you back, right? To just bring you back from that point of despair, right? Well, thank you so, so much. God bless you. And we will post this in the next week or two. And I know that it will be really, really appreciated by our people.
Thank you very much.